Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
If you're feeling anxious about your investments with all the economic volatility and chaos in Washington, tune in to Super Talk Jackson on Wednesdays from 9 to 10 a.m. and Sundays from 8:30 to 9:30 a.m. for Element Wealth Radio with Jeremy Nelson. Learn more at myelementwealth.com.
You're listening to the Rebel Report podcast, where it's all Ole Miss all the time. Here's your host, Michael Borky.
Welcome in, everybody, to the Rebel Report. I'm Michael Borky on this Tuesday morning. Big basketball game tonight. Ole Miss, as I said last time, as you guys have heard many times, very much far on the outside of the bubble looking in, but still on the outside of the bubble looking in a win tonight. And a win Saturday can make at least them a part of the conversation. So a big basketball game tonight. Looking forward to watching that one. You've got baseball tonight as well going on at quite literally the exact same time. So you've got baseball coming up at 6:30 at Swayze against Memphis. Can Ole Miss continue the momentum? We will have to see tonight. And then again, basketball coming up at Georgia 6:30 as well. 6 o'clock on the SEC Network. 6 o'clock for Ole Miss and Georgia. So going on at the same time, busy sports night for you Ole Miss fans. But hey, that's why we love this time of year. So we've got a couple of things to get to today. First of all, there is some news on the baseball front. Mike Bianco is changing up the weekend rotation. So we'll talk about that a little bit. And also, Richard sat down with Keith Carter yesterday, and so I'm going to bring you that interview. I hate bringing you stuff that I don't do, but I mean, Richard and I get paid by the exact same people, so I think it's okay. Some really interesting stuff from Keith Carter, though, that I think you need to hear, and so we'll talk about that a little bit before we get to it, and this baseball weekend rotation change right now. So again, my name is Michael Borky. Follow me on Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube at Michael Borky, B-O-R-K-E-Y. And wherever you get your podcasts, if you have not already, please subscribe to this one. Just search Rebel Report in your favorite podcast app, subscribe, and leave a rating and a review. So in his weekly appearance on our radio show yesterday, Mike Bianco announced another rotation change. This is his second one in as many weeks. And this is one that, simply put, needed to be made. So Mike Bianco is going to start Gunnar Dennis again on Friday. Liam Doyle is going to take the game two start for Ole Miss, and Saunier is going to stay in game three. So first of all, I know yesterday we talked about how I think that Saunier has earned a move up in the rotation, but you know, maybe Mike Bianco likes him in this spot. I mean, with the way Saunier is pitching right now, there aren't many teams that you're going to play that can provide a better third arm. I mean, maybe there are some out there, but Saunier is really good in that spot. And having him in that spot is going to lead to a lot of wins, I think, this year, considering what most teams will run out there for their Game 3 starter. So Ole Miss has a plus starter in their rotation at one spot, which is not exactly something so far this year, and especially not really last year for most of the year that you've been able to say. So Bianco electing to keep him in that game three, that Sunday role, totally like rational and absolutely fine decision. I thought about the idea of moving him up, but apparently Mike likes him in that role. Totally fine with Gunnar Dennis as well, getting another game one start. Yeah, he needs to extend into games a little bit better than he has, but again, the stats don't bear out how he was better than his stat line indicates on Friday. So, but the real story is Liam Doyle getting a start, JT Quinn going to the bullpen. Maybe he'll start midweeks moving forward. It is obviously not starting today, so maybe that's the case. This is a move that had to happen, though. That they had to mix it up. The margin for error in the SEC is too thin, and when your day two starter cannot get out of a third inning, you're really just setting yourself up for a bunch of losses in SEC weekends against better pitchers. And, you know, the stuff is there. Maybe he can figure it out, but there had to be some tinkering with this rotation, and Mike Bianco may not be done either. I actually, one thing I do like about the way he's managed this early part of the season is the willingness to mix things up. I mean, he picked a rotation and has made some adjustments to it a couple of times now, trying to figure out the best three. Remember, I'm not saying this team is going to win the national championship. That's not what I'm doing here. But Dylan DeLucia was not a regular starter until April on that championship team. So the willingness to tinker and move around the starting rotation, I think, is a really good thing. And doing it here. So Doyle has pitched five complete for Ole Miss this year after a really good freshman campaign at Coastal Carolina. Again, five complete, only three hits in those five innings, and has struck out nine and just walked a pair as well. So been good so far for Ole Miss, and he'll get the start over the weekend. So maybe he's the guy that can give them some extended innings. He did that at the end of the year last year at Coastal Carolina. He was able to get deeper into ball games than Ole Miss's starters have been able to. I'm well aware that the Sun Belt is not the SEC, but he has shown the ability to do that, and we'll see what he can do with the ball in his hands. An appropriate decision, I think, and a good one from Mike Bianco. So they may not be done here, but we'll see this weekend with the schedule, you know, being what it is. You've got, you know, another week to get it right before things really ramp up. I mean, Morehead State should not challenge them in any way. This should be a good weekend to continue to build some confidence going into South Carolina at home next week. So anyway, that is your news of the day. And we'll get to Keith Carter after I tell you the podcast is brought to you by Advantage Business Systems. Check them out online, absms.com. That is the website. Advantage Business Systems has your Mississippi business covered for all of your office technology needs. Anything from copiers and printers and mail machines to cloud storage, data security, IT projects, phone systems, whatever it is. If it's technology in the office and your Mississippi business needs it, check them out online. Advantage Business Systems, absms.com. The podcast is also brought to you by Priority One Bank. Let them make you their priority. Got 16 locations here in Mississippi, so there's likely going to be one in your backyard like there is mine. They make you their priority with local loan servicing and decision making, so you don't need to get on Zoom or talk to somebody out of state to get a loan or have your loan serviced. Their online banking platform is phenomenal. It's just it's a one-stop shop. You don't need multiple apps to do everything you need to do with your money, because Priority One Bank makes you their priority. So Richard and Keith crammed a lot here in about, you know, 20 minutes of conversation. A few things of note, and then I'll play it for you, and that will end the show. First of all, I do really like how they are not shying away from expectations in football. He answered more diplomatically than this, but when he was asked, he being Keith Carter, if it's playoff or bust for this football team, essentially, yeah. I mean, you know, the caveat being that injuries happen, and if they do, they could change the prospects of a season. But yeah, this everything has been built to this point for Ole Miss football and Lane Kiffin and him and the investments. And this is a year where they've got to capitalize on it, and they're not shying away from that. We also learned that in the 12-team playoff, if, let's say, Ole Miss were to host a playoff game, the visitor allotment is only 3,500. If Ole Miss were to go to, say, Ohio State or something, the visitor allotment is 3,500. So it's a static number, does not change based on stadium size. It's not a percentage. It's 3,500. Found that to be interesting as well. But more importantly, he was asked if a split is coming, and his answer was he does. He thinks that a split away from the NCAA is coming, starting with football, because of the financials and things like that. That has to go first, and he expects it to happen. He did say in the conversations that they're having that there are some people that want the athletes to get paid from the revenue sports, and then there are some people that want the athletes to get paid for every sport. And I hope those people that are advocating for every athlete on the campus to draw salary or a revenue share, I hope those people are met with strong dissent, because you guys know me. I'm not one of the college sports is everything's ruined. And I mean, gosh, I saw a video yesterday, one of those SEC-based podcasts that were just so mad. And he kept saying, it ain't the damn NFL because of the two-minute warning. I mean, of all things, a two-minute warning, you're not even really going to notice it. Like, of all the things going wrong in college sports, that's what you're mad about. You guys know I'm not that guy. College sports is not ruined, right? At least I don't think so. I mean, baseball feels the same. Basketball feels the same. Football around here last year was awesome. So when you say it's ruined, what are you talking about? Materially, it's not. However, if those people that want every athlete on campus to get a share of revenue, then they will destroy college sports. Because if you treat them all like a business, almost all of them will get cut. It is absolutely insane that there are people that think that the number four member of the golf team carries the same value as the quarterback. It's absolutely nuts. There are two sports on a campus that actually can generate millions of dollars in revenue. Baseball at Ole Miss makes a tiny little bit of money, and they are an outlier. Everybody else loses millions. If you want softball and golf and tennis and hockey, and hockey does make money in some places, but not most. If you want them all to split revenue, they're just going to cut those sports. They're going to cut them. And so it's refreshing to hear Keith Carter talk about how they want to preserve sports. And reading between the lines, it sounds like he understands if you want to preserve sports, you can do revenue sharing with the sports that generate revenue. Because if you want to start treating softball like they deserve to get paid, and I know that word bothers people, beyond the value of their scholarship from the school, then they're just going to cut softball. Because softball loses millions of dollars. But there's a lot of value in having a softball program. So I hope the smart people get a hold of that line of thinking and tell everybody else that how stupid that really is. Because if you treat all sports like a business, they're just all going to get cut, except for football and men's basketball. So I hope they figure that out. And it sounds like people like Keith Carter are very much understanding of what's at stake. So very interesting conversation coming from Keith. And here it is for you right now. So I'll play that for you now. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. This is Richard Cross. He sat down with Keith yesterday up there in Oxford. And here that is for you right now. So Richard and Keith, thank you guys for tuning in. We'll do a recap pod tomorrow talking about the basketball game and, of course, the baseball game as well. See you then. Here's that interview.
Busy time of year, right? A lot going on. You've got all of the spring sports underway, softball playing kind of without a stadium or stadium in progress. Baseball, a little bit of a rocky start, playing better as of late. Men's basketball, trying to figure out a way to get to the dance. Women's basketball in incredible shape right now, and lots of other stuff. I guess golf's in Cabo right now for them as well. Men's golf is.
Yeah, tons going on. We talk about it all the time. You know, the fall gets a lot of the hype because of football, and it should, but the spring is much busier. So many events going on, and I think this weekend in Oxford we had something like 15 events going on with tennis and all that. So, but it's fun, you know, a lot to do. And like you said, some meaningful games down the stretch for our basketball teams, and baseball's getting going. Softball, I think they're something like 12-3 or 12-4 right now, gotten off to a great start. So, the spring is wild, but, that's what we do it for. It's a lot of fun.
And then there's some spring football that gets mixed in with that as well, that seems to be gathering some attention. It feels like this was a different type off season than you've had in recent years. Maybe that allowed you to sleep better at night. I don't know, but you go from the win in the Peach Bowl to not a lot of drama about whether or not a coach is going somewhere else or is going to be back. Just kind of rolling into a year where expectations are maybe as high as they've ever been.
Yeah, and you know, that's what we want. You know, that's what we talked about when we hired Coach Kiffin 4 years ago, is that we wanted to be relevant. We wanted to be a part of that national conversation, and we're here. You know, and I tell people all the time, like, you know, the Peach Bowl was fantastic, and to win that game and play as well as we did, and you love it for those seniors. You love winning the game, obviously. But what's really cool about it is just how it set up the momentum for the offseason. And, you know, Coach Kiffin and his staff followed that up with a great portal class and signing class in high school. And so just a lot of excitement. And, you know, seeing those guys walk around campus, they look good. You know, those guys look good. They're going to look good coming off the bus. So just a lot of fun. And I know they're ready to get them out and see them in pads and see what they have for sure.
So we were talking about it on the show not too terribly long ago, and I don't know if it's because of growing up here and going to school at Ole Miss, and, you know, there are lots of different ways to define a good season. And programs like Alabama's definition of a good season or an excellent season historically has been different than the way Ole Miss would define a good season. But I feel like for the first time in my lifetime, it's legitimate to say, if Ole Miss doesn't make the college football playoff in this new iteration, then this coming season was a disappointment. I understand that there are things that could affect that along the way. Is that an okay statement?
Well, at the risk of my head coach being angry with me, I think it is. Yeah, I think that's something that I think he would say that's, you know, we've worked to this point. And I think now with the college football playoff, expanding to 12 teams, like you said, a roster that, you know, should be just about as good as anybody out there. We feel like we obviously have a great coaching staff that's going to, you know, put them in great positions to be successful. But like you said, there's so many factors. I mean, there's injuries, there's, you know, so many things that could come into that. But, you know, I think the expectation as we go through spring practice through the summer and into the fall is that we want to be one of those teams in the playoff. And, you know, I think that's something we'll work toward. And hopefully some of those other factors will fall in line for us. But we feel like we've got as good a chance as anybody.
I know how you're going to answer this, but I'm going to ask it anyway. And there's a reason I'm asking it. Would you rather see Ole Miss be one of the top four teams that gets a bye and doesn't play until the second round, or be in that 5-6-7-8 with the opportunity to host a game, a playoff game, in Vaught-Hemingway Stadium?
Well, of course, we would rather be in the top four, so we get the bye. But I'm going to answer the question the way you wanted me to. How awesome would that be? I mean, that would be incredible to play, you know, a meaningful playoff football game in Vaught-Hemingway Stadium in mid-December. You know, I think it gives me a little bit of anxiety with the ticket requests we would get, because I think that's something that we would have to work through. But, you know, I think this new format with the home game opportunities in the playoff is just going to be phenomenal. I think that, you know, whether it's here, whether it's at other places, it's going to make for great TV. And certainly, you know, I'm sure Mayor Tannehill would enjoy that, having another great big weekend in Oxford in December, and all of our local folks would too. So certainly from a competitive standpoint, probably want to be in that top four. But if we were to host, we would certainly, you know, we would really enjoy that.
There's so many things that still have to be worked out. Has a ticket distribution solution for the visiting team been settled? Is it percentage, or is it a solid number? Or
yeah, they get 3,500. They get 3,500 tickets. Okay. And so, you know, for us, we're used to giving out 5,000 to the visitors in the SEC as we are now. So certainly our home fans would get a lot of the tickets. And, yeah. You know, we would certainly make that as big a home field advantage as we could.
So and that doesn't matter if it's 65,000 seats in Oxford or 115,000 seats in Ann Arbor.
That's correct.
3,500 is the number. Was there pushback on that? It feels like that's a smaller number than I would have guessed.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, we were concerned about it because obviously we do have one of the smaller stadiums. Yeah. And so, you know, the 3,500 for us was easy and, you know, something that we actually will get a few tickets back, you know, relative to what we normally do. So I don't know. That may be something they look at in the future and try to change that. But right now it's the 3,500.
Will bands be part of that?
Yes, that will be a part of their allotment, is their band as well.
Yeah. I know that's getting off in the weeds a little bit, but I'm thinking about, I mean, we hear pageantry thrown around sometimes with college football, and maybe it's overplayed a little bit, but that's going to feel different than normally a road team coming. I mean, we were having a debate when people had thrown out the playoff projections of, I mean, there was one that had Notre Dame coming, and I think there was one that had Michigan in here, and it was like, what would that be like in Oxford? And somebody said, oh, Notre Dame would take over the stadium. I was like, I don't really think that's how this is going to work anywhere you go.
That's right. Yeah. You know, I'm sure they would try. I'm sure they would show up and try to get in the stadium, and I'm sure they would try to buy tickets on the secondary market and those type of things. But, you know, I think that the reason those top seeds get the home game is because they've earned that, you know, and they get the chance to have the home field advantage.
Speaking of the stadium, there was a couple of years ago, the big plans that got put on the back burner in terms of Vaught-Hemingway renovation. Where is that?
It's on the shelf right now. You know, we obviously launched that campaign just prior to NIL really becoming a thing.
Right.
And so when we saw kind of where the landscape was going, we decided, you know, that's a huge project. That was a big part of the campaign, going to be probably up to close to $300 million by the time it was all said and done to do that west side. And we still have it. We know right where it is on the shelf. We're going to come back to it someday. It's a project that we feel like is important, but we're just not in a place to do that right now until we find out, you know, where this college athletics landscape is going to land eventually.
So there's lots of pending litigation, right? And one of those things is about the potential for back pay, NIL back pay to former student athletes. And I guess it's kind of across all of college football. The number that's been thrown around is $3 billion. What does that mean?
Well, obviously that's a big number. And I know the NCAA has said they would be willing to cover some of that, but you know, where does the rest come from? And I think that's why it's being litigated right now. Why there's, you know,
if they hadn't spent so much money on lawyers losing lawsuits, they'd have more to help cover that.
They would. We can't go down that road though, Richard. But yeah, it's certainly going to be interesting. I feel like where this could all land, obviously there's four or five different, you know, lawsuits right now that are all against the NCAA. They all kind of revolve around the same thing. They all kind of touch each other in some way. I can see a lot of these maybe merging at some point and all becoming kind of one bigger lawsuit that could maybe be settled easier potentially if it's formatted that way. But you would certainly love to see it. I would love to see it settled before it goes to trial, because I think if you go to trial, I mean that's not good for anybody. I don't think it's good for our side for sure.
And in a lot of ways, it feels like not dissimilar to the idea of, hey, let's let Congress handle what the future of college athletics looks like when you're not entirely sure you're going to like the result of what you ultimately get handed.
Well, that's the thing. You can't really have your cake and eat it too. You know, you feel like you might need some help from Congress on a few of the matters and a few of the items, but at the end of the day, I'm not sure you want them running your enterprise. And so I'm not sure you can get one without the other. So I really feel like we're going to be able to get closer to a finish line on this really through the litigation and the courts. I think that's what's going to push it. I know there's a lot of smart people working on it every single day. Obviously, you know, Greg Sankey and our folks at the conference office are trying to lead from the front on it. But we feel good about, you know, hopefully where we'll finish up.
We'll pick this conversation up on the other side of a quick timeout. Sports Talk Mississippi with you. Yes, we certainly can try to do that. So we were kind of working our way toward some of the big picture topics that are going on in college athletics right now. And I don't know that there is a bigger hot button topic outside of NIL, and maybe that's a different one altogether, but format of the college football playoff. You know, there's a new deal that's been agreed to. No, that deal hasn't actually been agreed to. Somebody leaked it too soon. 12 teams, 14 teams, the SEC and the Big Ten automatically get the top two seeds every single year. What's the right solution? Just lay it out.
Yeah,
there.
What is the
correct way to do this?
You know, I really am happy that we're having these conversations. I think it was way too long, you know, for us to get to 12, and then, you know, now to 14 here in a couple years, whatever. You know, we're sitting there at four, which was a good step, but then we stayed at four too long. I mean, there was too much controversy. We should have moved earlier. I think the SEC was trying to move earlier and it got stymied a little bit, but, you know, I think we're in a good place. And I think that, the more teams you can involve.
Wait, you mean move to 12 earlier?
Yeah. Yeah. I think there was a lot of talk.
When you say got stymied a little bit. Yes, Jim Phillips, the little society of very, very, very good friends with Kliavkoff and Kevin Warren. They blew the whole thing up.
It got stymied. I was not going to use any names, but since you did. No, clearly the SEC and Commissioner Sankey are always going to be proactive and leading from the front. And I think when Texas and Oklahoma came into the league, everybody said, whoa, let's hold on a minute before we do that. And basically slowed it down for a year and a half, you know. And so I think we could have been into 12 even before this year if that had not happened. But all that to say is I think the more teams you can get involved, you know, we were stuck with at four for so long that you get to games 9, 10, somewhere there in the season, teams didn't have anything to play for anymore. And so now I think you're going to have teams and programs that, you know, they're playing all the way through because you may lose 2-3 games and still have a chance to be in the playoff. And I think that just helps college football.
guaranteed spots for the SEC and the Big Ten? I mean, the latest kind of thing that appears to be bandied about in a 14-team model? Is that right? 14 or 16?
14.
Yeah, 14. Three for the SEC guaranteed, three for the Big Ten, two for the ACC and the Big 12, and then one group of five and Notre Dame if they do enough.
Yeah, I mean, I think that would be fair. I mean, I'll be honest, I haven't had any in-depth conversations with Greg or anybody from the league, you know, lately about it in the last few days. But, you know, it feels like with the positioning now with the SEC, 16, you know, quality teams, the Big Ten now with adding the West Coast teams in, it feels like you're going to need a little more representation out of those two leagues. And I think you saw, you know, a few weeks ago where the Big Ten, the SEC were having discussions about, you know, trying to, you know, talk through the future of college athletics. And I think that makes a lot of sense based on the market share they have and the power that they have in college athletics. So I think we're heading down the right road.
One of the things that, and I say this as a college sports fan, that is concerning is that there's so much difference between where the SEC and Big Ten are headed and even where the SEC or the ACC and the Big 12 are. I'm not saying that they collapse necessarily, but it's vastly different, not to mention the other 60 teams. And people keep saying, well, it's inevitable. There is a split that is coming. Do you believe that?
I do. I don't know that it's imminent. You know, I don't know that it's going to happen next year or the year after. But I feel like at some point there has to be a split in order to really make everyone feel like they can still compete. You know, and we as Ole Miss, I mean, even we certainly feel like we're going to be in the top tier of whatever split that's going to be, but we have work to do. Like, we've got to continue to make sure that we have a seat at that table and we're, you know, building great facilities and keeping great coaches and winning at a high level. But I just feel like there's a group that's a little bit lower that it would be good for them to have their own level, yeah. You know, and maybe compete for a national championship with that group, because it's just hard when the budgets are what they are and the resources are what they are. It's just hard for everyone to compete. That's for sure.
But to me, that's also the disappointing part, right? Because of what college athletics has been for my entire lifetime, for what you grew up watching, and it feels so. Is it? But when you say a split, do you mean football only, football, men's basketball, or all sports?
I think we're mainly talking football. I mean, I think that's where the clear delineation is with resources. And I mean, resources are different, but it's with basketball and baseball, I think you do have the upsets. You do have, you know, those that have happened in the NCAA. I don't think we would ever want to go away from the NCAA tournament model. It may not be called the NCAA tournament. I'm not sure what it's going to be called. But, you know, that's the most exciting time of the year when you've got those teams and you've got the 4 seed versus the 13 seed and the upset and all those things that happens in the College World Series and the college playoffs as well for baseball. I think it's probably going to start with football, because I just think that's where you're really starting to see, again, that true delineation of resources, talent. You know, with NIL becoming such a huge factor, it's going to continue to kind of put the gap between the haves and the have-nots. And again, I think that's unfortunate too, but I do think it's a reality that we're dealing with.
Visiting with Keith Carter, Athletics Director at Ole Miss. All guests appear on the Farm Bureau guest line, even though Keith's in studio with us. We appreciate that very much. Check out favorites.com and go with the home team, Mississippi Farm Bureau. You brought up NIL. And I feel like the word that has been used over and over, in either a positive way or a negative way, has been sustainability. Is NIL, as it exists right now, and call it NIL, pay for play, whatever, I don't care what you call it, is it sustainable? Can you continue to ask fans to foot the bill for your football roster?
I don't think it is sustainable in the long term in the current model. You know, I think that's where we're heading toward rev share. Well, I think we all know that.
I was not going to use that dirty word.
I know. But you need to start talking about it, because it's coming, and I think it's probably coming sooner than maybe we think. And so I think when you get into that model, that's where it becomes a little more sustainable. You'll have more of a structure.
Okay.
And I don't, you know, we don't love the fact that we want to always give more to our student athletes. And do we think we should share some revenue with them? You know, maybe we should. Absolutely, we should. But when it's real money, I mean, at the end of the day, it's money that's coming out of the budget. And so you're going to have to figure that out, what that means for other sports, what that means for your athletics department. But I do think it's going to allow you then to put a structure in place that is more sustainable than going back to donors and the, that type of thing.
Well, and the revenue sharing conversation is interesting to me because I'm curious what revenue we're talking about. Are we talking about football only revenue? Are we talking about revenue for the entire athletics department? Does that include television revenue? Does it include season ticket revenue? Does it include concession revenue? What number are we dividing? And then what's the percentage?
Yeah, I think all of that's still in discussion. I mean, I think everything you just mentioned has been talked about. It's been talked in circles, and you know, kind of where we end up, I'm not sure. You know, some people are saying that you know the sports that generate revenue and net revenue, then those are the ones that should be paid. Some are saying we should pay the entire you know gamut of sports. So it's going to be interesting to see where it shakes out, but. I do think we're going to have a systematic approach to it. I think it's going to end up in a place where everyone has the same basically number that they're working off of. I don't know exactly what that percentage is going to be. Who knows if it is it 10%, 15%, 20%, I don't know, but certainly I know athletics departments are starting to look at that, seeing what those numbers could be, running a lot of different models with those percentages and trying to figure out what that could look like in the future.
And so one of the answers to pay that would be, okay, let's grow revenue, but if you grow revenue, that means you're paying more out in a revenue share. So where do the cuts come? Because nobody really wants to go backwards.
Well, you don't want to go backwards. You certainly don't want to cut sports. I mean, that would be my number one priority in the whole process is making sure that we don't lose opportunities for our student athletes and some of our sports that don't generate revenue. But we're going to have to get creative. There's no doubt about that. And we're going to have to come up with more revenue, you know, to some of the dollars that are currently being raised for the collective. Did those end up coming in through the Athletics Foundation and then, you know, out to the student athletes that way at that time? I think that's probably part of the solution. But we got to grow revenues and we got to get creative for sure.
If revenue sharing ends up in play, does NIL go away, or do you think NIL is in addition to whatever that revenue sharing number is?
I don't think it goes away. My hope would be that maybe at that point it does kind of go to a true NIL, to where you're actually, you know, getting a deal and doing something, yeah, you know, that we all kind of intended NIL to be. The collectives have been good. Walker and his team have been fantastic for us. But I'm not sure that you go back to that word sustainability. If you're paying a rev share out of your athletics department budget, and then you're also expecting the collective to raise whatever that number is, I think that's the double whammy. You know, I don't think that that's sustainable at all. But it's going to be somewhere in the middle. I don't know that the collectives go away. I don't know that NIL, you know, goes away. But hopefully it does go back to the true intent and true meaning of NIL.
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.